Welcome to the Fourth Age, a Wheel of Time podcast brought to you by DragonMount.com.
But he could, if he's tapping it from Moradin as opposed to doing it himself.
I think Samael was pretty buff.
I haven't really thought about that part of it, but I guess that would probably be true. I mean, that would be the most dramatic, to have them not fighting side by side, but instead of having two separate areas.
Rand has people around him that are really good generals. Matt is a good general. Ruark is, you know, really commands the IO really well.
I think so. I do think that Lon will survive the last battle.
Welcome to episode number 9. This is Jason, and I'm joined by Ben.
Hello there.
And Carrie.
Hi, guys. The Wheel of Time currently has 11 books, and number 12 is currently being written.
Thanks for listening, everyone. I'm back. Let's just say by saying that. I was gone last week. I won't bore you with the absolutely boring tales of why I was gone, because we've got actually something really cool to tell you. We, Fourth Age Podcast, just been nominated for pretty cool award. It is a Parsec Award. Jason, tell them what that is.
Well, Parsec Award is something actually that's given out. It's going to be given out at Dragon Con this year. And it really is an extreme honor, really, to even be considered for a nomination for it. It's actually being run. One of the people that's running it is Tracy Hickman, who actually got me into reading fantasy series by the Dragonlance series with Margaret Weis. I'm sure everyone's probably heard of it.
Yep.
besides the Wheel of Time and Lord of the Rings, I would say probably my third favorite series of books is the Deathgate cycle with probably maybe the only person that might be able to kick Rand's butt, Haplo, but we won't get into that during this podcast.
That would actually be a fun podcast sometime, but not now.
We're all really excited, and thank you to all of our fans for making the podcast successful.
And we also we want to thank you guys, because we are just fans like you. Thanks for listening. We got nominated in the Best Fan Podcast. We're just big fans of Robert Jordan and the work he does, so thank you to RJ for writing a really cool series. And don't forget, this year we're going to be at Dragon Con. Jason and I are officially going to be down there. We're going to have a Wheel of Time track. And for those of you who have been to Dragon Con before, you know what that is. Those who are like me don't quite know what that is, but I'll be down there and I'll figure out what a track is. But we'll be down there, and I'm not sure if we're going to be doing a live broadcast or if we're going to just be doing a recording down there. But either way, it's going to be pretty cool. So if you are at Dragon Con, you can stop by and see why I'm in radio, not on TV.
Actually, yeah. Thanks for touching on that, Ben. What the plan is right now is that we are actually going to do not a live broadcast, but we'll say a live recording. We're trying to set everything up with getting the right computer and audio equipment at the track actually to do the live show, and then we're going to post it that weekend for everyone to hear. We're going to go into now, and as we talked about last week, we have a few different sections for each of us now. And the first one that we're going to go through, because there is no spoilers yet, we'll tell you when the spoilers are coming. I'm going to go through my Wheel of Time audio journal. I did start reading the books again just a couple weeks ago. So what I'm going to do is go through each of the chapters I read during the past week and let everyone know about interesting observations. I'll give everyone a synopsis of what happened during those chapters. I think it'll be a good reminder of, a good reminder of the books and where they were at different times. So obviously I'm going to start with the Eye of the World chapters 1 through 10. Main characters who are introduced are the main characters that everyone's going to know. It's Rand, Matt. I'm not going to go through them all. Everyone knows them. So
the main eight.
The main eight or nine or ten or however many it is. But in later chapters, later books, I'll go through the new characters that are introduced, talk a little bit about them. The place that chapters 1 through 10 all go, all focus around is, of course, the Two Rivers. The beginning of the series, one interesting thing that I noticed is during the later books, even starting with books 2, 3, 4, and just going right through to 11, Robert Jordan is very, very descriptive. I don't want to say the books move along slow, but because there's so much description in the later books in every single chapter that there's not really that much that each book covers, more than you would think with such a thick book. But that's not true for the first 10 chapters of The Eye of the World. Things happen so, so quickly, which is a good break. I mean, lots of things happen quickly, and I think it's done for a reason, because when you're first reading the books, it's like something that a lot of movies do too. The first 5 minutes or so of movies, it really goes fast and tries to get you into the books as fast as possible. So when you're there, you're hooked. Just briefly going over, of course, the first couple chapters of the preparations for the Beltane Festival. The Trollocs invade Rand's house. Rand actually kills the first Trolloc, which is very interesting when you think about his importance in the rest of the books. He is the first person that does, at least in the books, he's the first person that kills a Trolloc. And there are some hints about Rand's past and what about not being born in the Two Rivers and the things that Tam says as he's being, I'll say, carted through to the Two Rivers. There's, of course, the dream sequence. There's a couple of dream sequences that are caused, of course, by Ishmael, being chased by Trollocs, ending up in Tar Valon. And one of my favorite scenes is when, in the dream, when Rand is in Tar Valon and he's everywhere he turns, he just sees the White Tower down the street everywhere he turns. So he just finally decides, well, I'm just going to go there. The chapters end with the party leaving, the party consisting of Moiraine, Lon, Rand, Perrin, Matt, Egwene, and Tom. Of course, the characters that we all know and love. And Rand is actually the person that notices the Drakkar hunting them. Interesting observations. Moiraine does mention to Lon that there is a small reason to celebrate, which actually, now that the prequel novel is released, New Spring, it actually reflects back on that what Moiraine and Lon are really doing there is looking for the Dragon Reborn, and that's what their small reason to celebrate is. There's a little bit of foreshadowing. Matt does say that he's interested in battles, which is pretty interesting that maybe in the later books, with Matt being so good at battles, maybe it's not something that happens to him. Maybe it's something that was born in him. And, of course, Rand's prickly feeling when Moiraine uses the power on Tam. Interestingly, he'll actually tune that power later in the books, and he's actually can pretty much tell when a girl is holding on to the power. So right in the first few chapters, there's actually a reference to it. And where I left off, the party was heading to Taren Ferry. That's where they were heading to. So we'll continue the story next week. And what we're actually going to do now is we are going to go into some spoilers now, because Ben has some things to talk about. Go ahead, Ben.
All right. That's right. I'll give you a chance. This is your last chance. If you were listening and you have not read, my theory is going to be probably from book 2. So if you haven't read book 2, stop listening right now. Okay. For those of you who are left, it is time for my crazy theory of the week. And you've probably never heard a crazy theory of the week. That's because this is the first one. Okay. We are going to have probably two different types of crazy theories. One of the crazy theories is going to be what we have this week, is where I expound on something that I think is a fundamental truth in the book that might be a little wacky. You'll see what I mean by that in just a little bit. The other type that we'll have, probably periodically, is I'm going to scan some forums on some different Wheel of Time fan sites and just see some of the nut jobs that come up with some really funny, crazy ideas. They come up with them all the time. I have a few of them in mind. I'm not going to spoil them for you now, but you'll just be amazed, I think, at some of the sensible people, whenever they really start looking for theories, come up with some wacky stuff. And so we're basically going to find them and laugh at them. Okay. Now, getting on to this is a real crazy theory. I think this one's really true. And if you'd like to flame me, please be my guest. But I don't think you can, because I'm right. All right. My crazy theory of the week. Matt's luck is coming simply because he is the one who blew the horn of Valyr. That is my crazy theory of the week. I'm going to support this fact by pointing out that Matt, in you actually touched on it a little bit, Jason, in your reread of the first books. You know, you said Matt was interested in battles. I think that's because Matt was just a little goofball kid who was trying to get in trouble. He was always interested in, you know, putting a badger onto the field and watching the girls scream and, you know, just that mischievous type of stuff. And he always wanted to explore epic cities and stuff. And so that's why he was interested in battles then. But until he really started knowing about them was whenever he went into the little... the Teron Greal, that's it, the Teron Greal in book 4, whenever he goes in there and starts, or actually book 5 and 4, whenever he starts getting those memories put into his head and he talks with Eelfin and Aelfin, and you all remember that. Well, there is one part of his skill that is unexplained, and that's his luck, and I'm going to say his battle prowess. Matt defeats two of the greatest swordsmen in the entire kingdoms with just a staff, and they've been hardened, seasoned warriors, Galad and Gawain, which is, this is in, let's see, book 3, whenever he's just recovered from being healed by this incredibly massive ordeal. He's being separated from the dagger, he's not 100%, but he still manages to beat both Galad and Gawain in a fight. To me, that sounds pretty lucky. I don't think it's... I mean, part of it is a skill, because we've seen through later chapters, later segments in the book, where he actually is a pretty skilled warrior. He's learned some techniques and stuff, but all that happened in book 5. What he's talking about here is in book 3, whenever he hasn't gotten his battle knowledge yet, but he does have his battle prowess. Why does he have that? I think it is a leftover, sort of one of the goodies that the Horn of Valyr gives to the person who blows it, to make sure that they really are around for Tarman Gaiden. That's pretty much what the entire theory consists of. The biggest evidence is because of the fight with of Gawain and Galad. And also, if you read book 3, watch how many times Matt refers to his luck. He discovers that he is lucky before. He even makes mention that in the Two Rivers, back whenever he was a young kid, he didn't have luck. He lost a silver penny, or a silver whatever, a silver mark. He lost a silver something playing with a guard in with a merchant's guard. Back whenever he was a young kid at the Two Rivers, and it mentions that in book 3. So all of this luck culminating is coming from blowing the horn of Valyr. And so that's my crazy theory of the week. If you'd like to flame me, be my guest. I would love to hear it. You can post some comments in our forums. You can start a discussion thread, say, Ben is a nut job, he doesn't know what he's talking about. I love it. But give me evidence, otherwise I will just make fun of you.
Jason, since you're rereading the books, if there's any way, because I never noticed when his luck, when they really started talking about it, maybe if you notice any reference to Matt and luck before that, maybe jot it
down. I'll keep an eye out, yeah. I'll keep an eye out to see.
Oh man, he's going to bust my theory.
Sorry, Ben.
No, that's all right. No, if he can bust it, then good luck to him.
No, but if not, then hey, I never thought it. I never linked the two together. So.
Yeah. So that's my crazy theory. I've actually got another good, real crazy theory that our guy Kevin was talking about. So you guys probably know what that is. I'll sort of tease that is coming up for some of our listeners. I got a really good one, and it involves Asmodian. That's all I'll say. How about that for a tease?
Very neat.
Okay, Carrie, go ahead.
Yes. Anyway, that's very interesting. And what we're actually going to be doing for some feedback is some of the voicemail questions for having a question of the week have been slowing down. We haven't been getting as much feedback as we were when we started. And we really love to hear from our fans. And it's great to get emails and voice recordings, whichever you can do. So what we're just going to do now is some general feedback, which lately has been emails mostly consisting of. So I will read a few for you. And one of them that I'll say later will lead into our discussion this week. This one is about Rand, and it's about our discussion that we had last week for Rand's character. And I will read this here. I'm going to the end to see who it is. It's Drakon who wrote it. I think Rand's loss of hand is tied to mythology, like much of the Watt symbolism seems to be. Here is a link about the Norse god Tyr, and there's a link here, which I will leave that out for now. I'll post it in the forums if anybody wants to go see it. As far as Rand dying, I do not believe he will be dead. He may die like Matt died, but I do believe that he has a few reasons to disappear. One, he has made no friends with much of the ruling class in bringing everybody together. I see peace, not utter tyranny. Lots of assassins, both of those who resent the power he stole and those who want more power. I also think that is where Loghain's glory comes in. Who better to take the reins? Kind of interesting about what we were talking about last week.
I think he touched on something too that I've been thinking about, and last week I said that I really am firmly in the camp that Rand is going to die at the end of the books, and I still believe that. And to further my theory, I'm going to say this: if he lives, he's going to have to make a decision between the three women, and I could see that going down a path maybe that's going to actually make the books a little too long, if you know what I mean. I don't think that at the end of the books, Robert Jordan's going to concern himself with figuring out how Rand's going to live the rest of his life. Obviously, he's not going to be able to live with three women for the rest of his life. So I think that's evidence enough. Evidence
but
enough.
Yeah, they have multiple wives.
That's true.
And
but
yes, what he is.
It's
and
true.
Aviand is. So they could just have this big happy family.
Maybe, I don't know.
Big family anyway.
Certainly would be a big family with all the kids that are flying around.
Let me, I would go way too long if I started talking about what I missed out on last week. So I'll just sort of pat myself on the back. Drakon, you picked it out perfectly whenever you talked about Loghain's glory coming after Tarmond Gaiden as he starts to rule. As compared to another popular theory, which is not so crazy, but popular, that he's going to be taking down Taim in a big, massive battle of Sidene or something like that. It's going to come afterwards, and he's going to be a great ruler and administrator. So, yeah, that's my theory, and he agrees with me. Way to go, Drakon. That's why you get your emails read, folks, is just agree with me. No, just kidding.
Yeah, it's true. I agree also with how he doesn't have a lot of friends when it does come to the ruling class. Like he said, that I don't think that Rand really does want to rule, and I don't think that that's the type of life. Right now he's doing it because he's trying to bring everybody together. He wants to make sure he wins the last battle and has everybody set behind him and all his ducks in a row type thing. But I don't think afterwards, if he lives, that he's going to want to be continue to be the Dragon Reborn. I see him kind of living a life where possibly nobody knows who he is. And, you know, I just kind of assumed he would be with all three of his women, but maybe not. Maybe he'd have to choose. Or maybe he won't be alive.
That's just so fun to talk about.
Yeah. But that's definitely interesting. We do have another email that was sent in by Mike, and this one has to do with Avienda, who happens to be our character of the week. So it's kind of neat. It just goes into a little bit of details about her. And he says, "Hey guys, Avienda is this week's point of discussion, right? She is one of my favorite characters due to the fact that she is multifaceted. She is a maiden, near sister to Egwene, wise one, watcher of the Karakhan, first sister to Elaine. As close to being Aes Sedai as one gets. We learn from Min that she has quadruplets, sired by Rand. The whirlwind of events that her life takes her on after that makes her my vote for toughest chick in this more than epic tale. One can only guess what RJ's visualizations are by reading. He must have a completely different view of his fictional world than us readers. After reading this, I am imagining a young Daryl Hannah with red hair. Mike,
Wow.
So there's... What do you think?
That really sums Avienda up. Yeah, absolutely.
That's quite an email.
It is.
You can tell who's this guy's favorite character is.
Yeah.
He talks about a whole lot of stuff in this email, and I think it's really interesting. Some of the stuff he talks about is speculative. Here's my question. She's as close to being an Aes Sedai as one gets. And this is going to be the only thing I'm going to disagree with you, Mike. I don't think she's all that Aes Sedai-like. She's fierce. She has her G.A. toe. She wants to have the Aiel, you know, bettered, but she just doesn't have the Aes Sedai, the Aes Sedai talent for completely overlooking the fact that the world is going to hell in a handbasket and fighting over a stupid tower. So because of that, she can't be an Aes Sedai. And yes, that is my subtle dig on how I hate Aes Sedai who are doing that.
So and you're right, I think she has too much common sense, actually. And I don't want that to sound a bad way, but I agree. I don't really think that she's very much like Aes Sedai at all. But I see his point, too. I mean, she is a very strong female character in the series, and I think that might be where he's getting confused as to Aes Sedai as being very strong female characters. He did touch on one other thing about her bearing quadruplets. Do you think that's going to be born by Rand? How do you think that's going to work out?
Well, if Elaine has twins and she's got quadruplets, that's going to be a really big family.
It certainly is.
Only if they just have those and that's it. I would imagine. I mean, there could be more, unless Rand does die, and then I guess there won't
in that
be.
Case,
but
she does. She'll be without him.
There's supposed to be something odd. Is that the word that was described by Min? Odd about.
Yeah,
her
there's something in it. The quote was she's going to bear four children, but there's going to be something, and I believe that's the exact word that RJ uses is odd. He mentioned that he pictures Avienda as a young Daryl Hannah with red hair. I think that's pretty good. I think my choice was Mila Jovovich was my choice.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, for the movie thing. Yeah, mm-hmm. Mine was actually Uma Thurman. I like Uma because she's really, really tall. And whenever I see Avienda, the thing, it's weird, I don't know why it is this, but whenever I hear the name Avienda, I always picture her sitting down with her legs, just like, I picture her standing and then sitting down in, like, the palace at Andor or wherever, and she just sits down and, like, folds her legs up and, you know, just sits in that weird Aiel squatting style that is kind of impossible to describe, unless you're RJ. But, yeah, I just see that, and I see her with her big, long legs doing that, so...
Before we end the podcast this week, I do want to say thanks to everyone so far that sent in their logo for our logo contest. Still ongoing. We're looking for a logo possibly to put on some t-shirts, maybe have some giveaways, people sending in emails and questions. Our email address, of course, is podcast@dragonmount.com.
And for those of you who have a telephone and like to use them, you can give us a call and make a comment on the show. Good comments, bad comments. You want to flame my crazy theory? You want to expound your own crazy theory? The number is 1-888-333-7690. There's not a live operator standing by, but it'll go to a recording. You can just record what you want to say. Give us your name and your email address, and you might be on the show.
Also, the website is www.dragonmount.com/podcast to get to the Fourth Age page. Also, there's a link there for the forums. Check out the Fourth Age forums, and you can post anything you want there. Give us some ideas, feedback, anything.
Our character of the week for next week, episode 10, is going to focus on Elaine.
Go Elaine.
Yeah.
Yes. So that's who we're going to talk about as far as our character discussion for episode number 10. And that concludes our podcast. Thanks, everyone, for listening.
Thanks, everybody.
Yep. Take care, guys.
Music for the Fourth Age podcast is brought to us by Josh Needleman. His website's www.scriberocks.com, myspace.com/John Needleman Acoustic Band, and joshneedleman.net. The Fourth Age podcast is also produced.